It's nice counting down. Yeah, but I don't think we'll use it.
So, okay.
You look cute, Chris. Don't worry.
I'm fine.
So sorry.
That's fine. Right. Good evening, everyone. It's another episode of Three Pronged. Today, we don't have one of the prongs because he's out gallivanting. Where is he again?
I can't remember where he said that. I think there's too many goats on for him tonight, I think. It's too much goat talk.
Yeah, actually, yeah. He's slacking somewhere. But today we're joined by two guests, so I guess we don't really need Neil today. We've got Chris, as usual, and we've also got another Chris and the lovely Zoe. So, guests, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Go on, Zoe, ladies first.
My name's Zoe. I am 32 years old. I only started farming about, 2015. I dipped a toe in, I probably would say. And then for the past 5 years, I've been farming full time. Before that, I was a hairdresser in London in the West End. And then, yeah, when I met Chris, my other half, he kind of, if I'm totally honest, I was never into farming. It was just his thing and it just was a bit fun at the weekends. But now I'm fully immersed in it. I couldn't imagine going back to cutting people's hair. I am the nurturing one on the farm. I like to say.
You still cut Chris's hair?
She needs to cut my hair.
I do cut his hair, but he's last on the list.
We're going to a wedding on Saturday. I was like, please, please sort my hair out.
Get a bowl on there.
I like his hair. The problem we have here is I like his hair long. I think he looks handsome when his hair's long, dark and curly.
I'm 30 now and I'm starting to recede. So, like, when it goes too long and the wind blows, it's just like...
It's like a toupee.
Yeah.
You can tie bob as well.
Yeah, I am, yeah. Well, I'm 32, I'm
not 32.
92, yeah, no, I'm 31.
He's 31.
Yeah. Yeah, I am a toy boy, that's right. Cradle snatcher.
Say about yourself.
Cradle snatcher.
So, I was born on a farm. I'd be like a third generation farmer. But my father died when I was 12, and it was like my dad's side of the family's farm. And my mum and him had divorced, so we had to go live with my mum, had to sell up all our farm stuff and all the rest of it. And I went off and done another job and then came back to farming. I came back to farming, I don't know, was it 8 years ago now, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
Not sure. Came back to farming, brought a few sheep, just sort of dipped the toe. And now we've got quite a lot of sheep and we've just had to start everything from scratch. Basically as new entrants, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, with nothing, really. And we just built up a farming from there. And here we are. I'm just going to shut that window because it's raining.
Can you hear that rain on our end? No. It's absolutely buffeting down now.
Really?
Well, the clouds are raining.
Really?
Is it not raining up there?
It's not raining up here now.
Up there. What's he on about?
Adam, it's more off. It's a special, special night.
Rubbish.
Cumbria might as well be called Wales, I think. So, Chris nicely mentioned there about new entrants, and that's going to be our topic today because I'm a new entrant. Chris and Zoe are new entrants. Our Chris is a new entrant, but I'd say the way you're operating business, you're not a typical farmer. Like, no typical farmer is in Venice during the summer when it should be on the farm. So, yeah, I think new entrance-wise, we all know that there are plenty of challenges faced as a new entrant. So what challenges did you two face, especially with Chris, your farm, sort of being born on a farm and then you had to move away, and also Zoe coming from salon side to into farming. What challenges have you guys faced?
The two challenges that you face are land access to land and money. They are the only two things holding anyone back from starting farming. Fact.
What about knowledge?
Knowledge is out there, though. Knowledge is out there.
You've got to be hungry for the knowledge.
Yeah.
Now, I feel I'm quite a good example of that. Like,
yeah,
the things I didn't know, a lot of them I'm too embarrassed to. I'll say things and Chris go, never say that out loud again. Like, embarrassing. Yeah. Not embarrassing for me because I don't know any different, but he's literally like, don't say that.
Yeah.
And they, I think.
The knowledge is there. Like, if you go to anywhere like where farmers are and go and talk to farmers, they'll talk to you. If you ask them advice, they'll offer it. Whether it's right or not is another thing, but you can. I remember when me and you went to Flav, went to Cumbria Flav, and we went to that show. What was that show called?
Yeah.
In the little village.
Where they do wrestling, Chris. What's it called?
Yeah. Where they do the
but
wrestling.
They all do wrestling in Cumbria.
I can't. Anyway,
Ardale. Ardale.
No, was it Ardale?
Not Ardale.
You're gonna.
That's gonna bug me. Anyway, so it's just happened.
Anyway, off topic. Let's
see if I can find it.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. The but Flav went straight up to a bloke and was like, right, what's going on here? And he just told you everything. But you remember about the dogs, like everything. Like, farmers don't get to talk to a lot of people, so they're out there doing it. So I think the knowledge is okay. And a lot of it you have to learn yourself as well.
You've just got to be, for me, I think you've just got to be fearless. So
don't be afraid.
Not even fearless, actually. So like a lot of what I learned off old boys at the market, whether it's dated practices or whatever.
Yeah.
Like if you stand ringside and ask questions, there's only been one time where someone hasn't given me an answer. Like I think farmers do want to pass on the knowledge, but they just don't want to readily offer it. You just have to ask and badger them till they give it up.
Yeah. So coming from a non-farming background, Zoe, you've always felt welcomed into the community, and especially like we've had ladies on the podcast before talking about sort of some of the disadvantages they've seen about being a woman in farming. Is that something that you have felt, or is it something that
I felt it as an advantage personally, but I've chatted to a lot of girls. Obviously, I've chatted to loads of girls online, and they've had a lot of situations where, you know, they've been discriminated against or made to feel a certain way. I'm not discrediting that's how they were made to feel, but personally, I've always felt it was an advantage for me. Because women do hold the power in the world. Fact.
I'm not saying
girls rule or girl power or any of that, but I do genuinely feel like we do have the upper hand.
Definitely.
I would agree.
100%.
So I would see it my sex was an advantage for me.
I don't know, because there'd be a couple of like older, outdated people that would think that you couldn't do things because you're a woman. But in the same breath,
but if they said to me,
you would make them feel more uncomfortable speaking to them than they would feel with you, because they're sort of like some of these old boys are quite intimidated by Zoe, because she's just like,
some of them are like
a young bird comes along to talk to them and ask them questions, and they don't know where to look. They're like,
I had a couple of times I've had it where, like, market's probably the best example. I've had it where I've waved at someone and I've been like, oh, you're right, hi. And Chris is like, how the hell do you know him? And I said, he's so and so's husband. And he'll be like, I didn't even know he was married. And I'll know literally where he spent Christmas, absolutely everything, because, you know, we've queued for coffee together and I've got chatting to him and he's opened up. But the way that I tend to see it, and this one of my favorite bits that I wrote in my book, is that if they were sat in my hairdressing chair, we would get on like a house on fire. So the fact that we're around a ring watching calf sell or whatever should really be irrelevant, because if we can find a common ground when he's literally looking at himself in the mirror getting his hair cut, why can't we find a common ground at the market or in the cafe, whatever? That's how I see it. But I'm quite an outgoing person, so maybe I'm not the best example. Yeah. Like, I will literally talk to everyone and chew their ear off like I'm doing now.
And I think also that point you make there, Zoe, is that I think in agriculture, how the industry is always sort of given shit in that it's not accepting, it's quite sort of outdated, etc. I think it's a lot of it's to do with setting, because the same person that will say, get off my land, or don't do this, whatever, townie, if you're in a pub and you bought them a pint, they'll be your best mate, because it's a completely different setting. So I think that point you make there about being sat in a salon chair compared to being in a ring watching cow selling, that's a very good
One thing that always frustrates me is, I've always, obviously my background's a little bit different coming from a farming family, but I've always felt I've picked up a lot of things from different farmers and good knowledge and good tips. But I often, then you see the sort of social media side of farmers sort of being so critical of each other, sort of keyboard warrior sort of, and getting into arguments, when really I think we're a lot stronger together if we're all sort of singing from the same hymn sheet against the sort of anti-farming NGO sort of brigade. And yeah, a lot of people do seem to use that as a bit of a face to be negative, which always frustrates me. And obviously you two are both very strong on social media. Have you found that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's savage.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, that's a nice little slide into it there, Chris. Nice.
Obviously, like, I don't even know where to start. Like, some of the stuff, the things that people have spoken to us about and been, I don't know, just how critical some people are about some stuff you put online just kills me. Like, if I post a 10-second video on Instagram, on an Instagram story, like, you don't get the chance to explain everything properly. You don't get to do all these things, and people will just pull you apart just because they, I don't know.
The bottom line of it all is people want the followers and they want the likes.
Yeah, it's just
jealous. That is like the bad apple. Like, that's not the right thing. What I mean is, it taints everything. It taints their view of you as a person. It taints their view of everything. That need to be popular. Sadly, ruins everything on social media, and I think it's got way, way worse. Like, I was having a conversation the other day, and the fact that farming is in the media, it's on mainstream TV, it's in, I saw Helen Rebanks was in the Times newspaper. Like, these farmers and farming families are everywhere. And that's so good for farming, but with that brings the rough side of everyone's now striving to be in magazines and be in on telly and stuff like that.
Sometimes, so just quickly, sometimes I'll have a conversation with someone and they will tell me that someone I've never spoken to or never met or don't even know exists on this planet has bitched about me to them. And I'm just like, what on earth is going on with the world? Like, me and this person have never had a conversation. They don't know who I am, but they're openly going to someone else.
Go and say what they said about you.
To, like, bitch about me and things like that. And I just think, I'm just a human being. Like, I just can't work it out at all. Like, they have no idea about any aspect, really, of my life, only what we show online.
That's the bottom line, though. It's what you choose to show. It's what you choose to show online.
It blows my mind, honestly. It just, I can't. So people can't work together because of it. It drives me mad.
So as new entrants then, because we're coming into the industry not, like, without any, because granddad did this, or dad did this, or great granddad did this. We haven't got that. We're literally doing what we want to do, or what we're talking amongst friends, what we've seen other people doing. Do you think then that social media has a place in farming going forward? Because
yes.
I 100% agree that the animosity, the thirst, and the sort of
desperation,
hunger for the hunger for followings is definitely an issue. It's honest. It's going to be a pandemic if it's not already. And especially for young people who are impressionable, and how I think the media, because like you say, 9 times out of 10, the media go on a story that's going to sell, which that's their business. Same way with us selling goat or selling pork or lamb. We're doing what's going to sell. If it's summer, you do kebabs, you do burgers. If it's winter, you're going to do your casseroles, your beef shins, whatever. And they capitalize on the fact that someone's got X number of followers compared to someone's got Y. Let's go with X because we're going to get more engagement there. But then behind that, they're not considering that some people that will be aiming for X because so-and-so got a certain contract because they have X followers, the mental side that creates for people from wanting likes, from wanting engagement, from bitching about someone you've never met before. It's like, how can we make it just be more positive than negative going forward?
It's too late, Flav.
I don't know. I think there is quite a lot of positivity in it. Like I do.
I agree with that. But you said for the younger generation,
mm-hmm.
didn't you? It's too late for the younger generation.
The thing is, what blows my mind is like people like, I don't know, these sort of people like don't seem to have a life outside of Instagram. They seem to just want to, they get so infatuated and so fixed on their lives on Instagram and what's going on with like people like us that they've never met or whatever, that I just think, what have you got going on in your own life that gives you time to just think about things like this so much? Like
Instagram is an app. It's not just, I don't know, it's not just farmers though. It's like, obviously I've got a lot, I still chat to a lot of my hair clients, and a lot of them have young daughters that I've done their hair since they were born practically, and their young daughters are now on TikTok with 3 different filters on doing the dances that they saw these face full of fillers girls do in crop tops. And that's TikTok's main thing now, is that kind of push of these hauls and these makeup looks and these whatever, and these girls are obsessive over it, to the point of, you know, they're overlipping their overlining their lips with lip liner, so it looks like they've had fillers at like 14 years old.
And here's like, me getting mocked for having big lips at school. Now people are copying it. Let's go. Watched. I'm not paying anything for these bad boys.
I do think about the social media being positive, like that group that you're involved with as well, Flav, of the, like, we're going to get to, because of me being on social media, I'm going to get a chance to speak to like the heads of supermarkets and things like that about farming and things like that. Like, and there's a lot of like issues that we can really grind into, and because you've got a big audience.
But they wouldn't know who you both were if we didn't have social media, would they?
Yeah, there is that.
But and there's real good things that can come of it, even if it's like just showing the masses. Like, look at the advert for the fake meat. Like, it blew up. We got an advert banned because they lied about fake meat just because of,
a lot of the stuff with the fake meat. I was reading something this week about actually the market share and the demand for it has fallen. Like, a lot of these brands have really failed. But I think on the cup side of that, one of the things I think with agriculture, a lot of the stuff on the regenerative farming side, like, yeah, there's definitely a place for it on a lot of farms. But sometimes some of the most outspoken guys in that community are very outspoken about the sort of the larger scale, more intensive farms. And we need those farms as well. Like, sometimes just because a farm is bigger, and producing more animals doesn't mean there's a drop off in welfare, and sometimes the opposite. Sometimes
this is where it comes a bit sticky with farming, because there's a million different ways of doing the same thing. You can't really talk about what you're doing or try and sell the benefits of what you're doing without it sounding like you're putting others down as well. So I think that sort of rubs people up the wrong way and things like that. And it's not always what you're trying to achieve, but it's sort of how it comes across.
Yeah, but in the pub, if you had, say, a regenerative farmer and an intensive farmer in a pub, they'd have it out, wouldn't they? But on social media, you're saying your bit, you're saying your bit, and your worlds aren't colliding. You just think that you're contradicting each other.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of it.
And I think there is the thing that people always have to be one or the other. Like, I don't know why humans want to try and be like magnets. You've got a north and a south pole. Like, you can be in the middle. You can be this one day, you can be that the other day. And I see this, especially as a pig farmer, when I went to a farm that had outdoor, people that I didn't even know had issues with indoor farming were like, oh my God, it's so good to see you working outside with the pigs. There's so much better out there. And I'm like, but imagine in the winter when the pigs have their bellies in mud. Tell me about that. When the water's frozen. Tell me about that. When piglets are being born and freezing to death. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and but they I won't think, put it like, on social Chris, media, so it don't exist, Flav.
Oh, you're jumping the gun. That was my next bit. The next bit. Pause. Hold up.
You're so
all right, we're tired. I'll take your job.
No. As Chris said there about the large scale and small scale, it's such a quick flip. It's like, oh, because it's big, it's shit. Or because it's small, it's always good. And that's not the case. And I saw this in COVID when people are like, oh, supermarkets are shut. Buy from us. We're small. We're better. But it doesn't work like that. Just because you're small doesn't make you better. And to move on to Zoe's point about not showing it, social media and farming. One thing I think as new entrants we can change is showing, and we are doing, is showing everything. Because for the consumer, we need to be open full stop. Like, there's no two ways about it. And for us to differ from sort of other industries or to make ourselves stand out as high wealth or the best we can be, it's about being open in what we do. And I think if we were to be open enough to the public, it will take some time, but it will get to a point when the public have buy-in on it. Like, look at France. Like, the French are behind their farmers, whereas in this country, with everything else going on, not just farming, there's so much other shit going on that people just care about filling their stomach up. They don't care where food comes from. You got costs, you got rent, you got all sorts of other shit going on. But on the social media side, I think the openness of content definitely needs to improve, because not every day cute lamb and cute goat kid or piglet.
No.
That is true.
And have you... Yeah?
I do think that's true. And I do think it's important to show X, Y, and Z, all of the above. You know that I'm not really frightened to show anything. However, what if you had a farmer that was too uncomfortable and fearful of the backlash to show something bad that happened?
It's not from the public.
It could be from animal activists, because I've had quite a few comments over the years, messages from people saying, I wish I could be as brave as you at showing X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. I get that a lot.
And that's where Chris's point of working together comes in. Because when you've already got fault lines, like tectonic plates in the industry, where a regenerative will kick off at an indoor, a large scale will kick off at a small scale, when an activist comes in, the whole Z, it just crack it even more. But if we're solid as an industry, anyone can put something up, because if someone chaps up trying to put them down and whatever, all of us come in and we're like, oi, this is this, leave them alone. But so until we sort our own house out, We can't worry too much about what's happening outside because we've got so much shit going on in the house.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree.
Does that upset you?
Yeah. No, it's just, deep, isn't it?
What do you mean? What do you mean it's upset you?
No, it hasn't. No,
like, he sighed and I said, did that upset you? And he said, no, it's just deep, isn't it?
I was just sorry.
Go on.
So back to new entrance side, do you think as an industry we're sort of doing enough to facilitate new entrants coming into it? Do you feel like you've been helped enough? And like, if not, what else could be there? You've talked about some of the barriers with finance and whatnot. What else could the industry do to help more people like you guys come in and be successful?
That's a tough one because I don't feel like we've had a lot of help at all, if I'm honest.
No, but
what frustrates me is the subsidy situation. I know that's changed a bit, but like the single farm payment, I think, and people are probably going to cry hard at this, but the single farm payment kept a lot of bad farmers farming. Not necessarily bad, but perhaps just got a bit lazy with it because it was easy not to do things.
Businesses that weren't viable.
If you went to a bank with their business model, they'd laugh you out the door, yet the government are giving you X amount.
And I feel like just paying farmers subsidies was just a lazy way of keeping, not lazy because it's easy. If the money's coming in, then why would you bother working for it? But it kept like hungry, just hungry people with different, like, you know, like we were hungry to go farming and do it. And it kept a lot of barriers in our way because it's just easy not to, you know, like when we were trying to get on some of these arable farms, trying to like get them to put cover crops in the winter so we could graze it. They just weren't interested because they don't need the extra income and they can just sit on, you know, they don't need the grief of like having sheep on there and problems that brings and all that sort of stuff. And it was just frustrating, like so frustrating because you see a lot of land not being used.
Yeah, we'd drive past fields that were just...
And you're just like, oh, come on, like, and you just know that it's okay. They're just having their money off of it. And it's just, that is the most frustrating thing, I think.
And it's an interesting question saying, what do we feel could be done to, you know, change that and give new entrants a step up or help? And the only thing I can think of possibly that's not so big, like bloody government policies, would probably be just to hear them out. So like if, for example, if, you know, a young lad or young woman came and said, you know, oh, that field out the front, blah, 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 just to hear them out rather than already have a no in your head, like landowners already having a no in their head before they even hear what you're going to say. That's probably the only thing I think would be different. Some of these large landowners, they wouldn't even... I sent so many emails, I didn't even get a reply before asking for grazing. You know what I mean? Just entertain them a little bit because you never know, it could be a beautiful relationship down the line.
Yeah.
But you look in other countries, guys, and you look at like Australia and New Zealand, they use share farming very successfully. Because obviously it allows all the landowners, maybe without a son or daughter that want to join the business, to still keep their asset and keep what keep the farm that they love, and then a younger person the chance to sort of start their own business and what do you think that would work over here, or do you think it would be successful? Would it be something you would entertain?
I'd entertain it. I think Yeah, it'd have to be, I don't know, it'd have to be the right fit and it'd have to be the right person.
I'd
100% entertain it, yeah.
Do you think...
I mean, our dream of like trying to, we'd never be able to buy a farm. Like, we're not ever going to own a farm and we are well aware of that.
Never stop dreaming, bro.
What's that?
Never stop dreaming, man.
No, I know, but it is, you know.
You've got to be realistic as well.
For us to have a, like, you know, the sort of farm that we'd need all in one place, it's millions and millions, you know, and we're not going to earn that farming. It's literally a lottery win. It's about, you know, as good as it's going to get.
Or a long lost wealthy relative.
Yeah.
if you're listening.
OnlyFans.
Yeah, sugar
or
daddy.
Literally OnlyFans.
Or a sugar daddy.
It's got to the point now where I watch these programs of these people making like £30,000 selling pictures of their feet, and I just think, why am I slogging my bollocks off, pushing an electric fencing wheelbarrow round that pictures of my feet?
Isn't it? She could be painting their toenails a video.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
What am I doing?
But yeah, so yeah, a share farm would definitely, like, 100%. I'd be up for having a conversation about it.
Yeah, we did have that.
I think there is a scheme that goes on in Wales that I, before getting the council farm, I did look into that. where you get a farmer that has the land and they're old, they've got no family, and then they, I think you go with them for like X number of years, and then whether you buy it or they leave a few. I don't know how that works out, but that definitely happens in Wales. And I think that would be quite good to happen in this country. But then you've got the issue of if it's family land, like, and there's something about the English, I think. Like, it's just...
like round here, though, now, like, so we're tenant farmers in Cumbria, and we're on a three-generation tenancy. But, like, now the tenancies are coming up are, like, 5 years, two, five years, like, you see these farms that are like surely like big landowners and land agents need to just maybe take a more long-term approach and look at it. The fact that if someone's got a farm for 2 years, they're not going to invest in that farm. They're not going to do the right drainage. Like, because people are worried about where they're going to be. Like, we surely need to be going back to those sort of longer term deals. It will be a benefit to everybody.
That's the next thing, Joey. That's the next thing that I wanted to bring up. That the farm tenancies are way too short. Way too short.
100%. On the flip side of that, of the length of tenancy, does that, if it's a long tenancy and there are more people that want to farm than land, then how do you work that? Because, like for us here, I know we've got 7 years, maybe max 10. But I know hopefully we can get somewhere else to go to after to give someone else a chance to have a go like I did. So it's something like a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because if you're trying to start, like,
Well, I was going to say, the way we've started and we've rented land off everyone all over the place and moved things about and literally started from scratch, that's why we really wanted the farm tenancy we've just gone for, because we are ready for that next step. And we were really in a good place to give up. Like, we leased like a couple of 100 acres. The next
week, 10 different locations. Yeah,
the next two people could have come up in our space. Do you know what I mean? And it give up, and we're ready for that next step now. And that's like the frustrating bit about it all is we've done all that sort of leg hard work that I kind of feel like you need to do. And got ourselves in this position now where we're ready to just jump on it. And just jumping back to link the social media side of things, what we were saying is the most frustrating thing I see on there is people like going, oh, well, you've only got 400 sheep. How's that a viable business? And you're like,
that pisses me off.
Everyone's got to start somewhere.
And not even that. Like, you don't know what our business is.
We had 250 lambs last year that we wintered, and everyone's like, 250 lambs, you can't make a business doing that. And I'm like, but if you
fucking stupid, man.
If all right, we need 1,000 lambs over winter to make it pay, that's great. But you've got to start somewhere, you know. And also, I wouldn't want to just go in with 1,000 lambs, all that debt and all that, and then learn all the mistakes I've learned now. You've got to let people have a chance to do things, you know? And that's one of the frustrating things I find with being a new entrant coming through, and especially being on social media, just people like...
Why does it... What annoys me the most is people are so hung up on how many sheep you've got. They're almost like obsessive over it. It's the first thing I'm asked whenever I do podcasts, whenever I do interviews, whenever I do anything. Okay, if you want to say a bit about yourself, how many sheep do you run? How many cattle do you run? And or they don't even say run. They'll say, how many animals have you got? And I always feel like I'm under... To them, it's just a normal question. But for me, I always think, is that a loaded question? Is that a not enough? Do you know what I mean? But actually, it's no one else's business how many sheep we've got. People, literally, that's probably the most, apart from what fake tan do you use, that's probably the most asked question I'll get in my DMs, is how many sheep we've got.
Really?
Gone well.
So,
that's what we do.
That point there about size and whatever, I think it's so stupid because no matter what size the business is, as long as the bottom line of their cash flow is green, who gives a shit? Because I get asked this. The first questions I've been asked after getting a tenancy is, oh, is that going to pay for you and Nikki? I'm like, well, it will at some point, but not yet because we've still got other jobs. And then you get comments like, oh, you're going all the way to Chippenham with two pigs. I'm like, my friend, those pigs are getting sold in a podcast, in a hog roast. One of those pigs will be the equivalent of selling five to the open market. So what are you telling me? So it's like Zoe says, if you don't know someone's journey, just sit down, shut up and watch. Because all this nonsense of people trying to...
Just be pleased that they're happy and they're just having a go and they're finding their own way. And if you think they're doing something wrong, this is how I feel. So one of my biggest issues from social media is there will be certain people, or when you read back through the DM, like the thread of DMs, they're picking holes.
Passive aggressive.
Not one single message will say, oh, wow, that calf looks really well. Oh, bloody hell, that's a turnaround, or whatever. All it will be is, oh, are you sure you don't want to vaccinate against foot rot? If I was you, I would have treated that with so-and-so.
Oh, bloody hell, what a turnaround.
I'm going to DM you saying that tomorrow when I see you, Liam Sheep.
Is there not anything better than someone messaging you saying your animals look well?
Yeah,
it's true. Especially as a farmer, getting told that, oh, the animals look well. It's honestly, there's no better compliment.
That's all I think.
We encourage people loads, don't we, on social media with little amounts of sheep and stuff. We're like, go on, son, have a go.
Quick diversion off the main bit. Back on track, but I've had a little bit. As new entrants, what do you reckon of the supply chain? So for you two starting, like Chris says, from scratch, having to get the animals, thinking, okay, who are we going to sell to? Where are we going to sell? How are we going to sell? How did you go around that supply chain setup?
How do you mean? Sorry.
In what sense?
As in,
what did we do at first?
Did you think to go, okay, we're going to sell on the open market? Or did you think for us to make it work, we're going to sell direct? Or did you try and go open market and it didn't work, vice versa? How did you navigate around that?
I don't really know. I think there was quite a lot going on. And at the start of it, we sold open market, but then we sold straight away the first year we did it. We straight away sold lamb boxes.
It was the second year.
Just because it was cool as well, though, that we were like producing.
We were proud.
Yeah, we were like producing these lambs and we were just like, this is cool. And like the more you'd speak to people about it, the more people were just like wanting to buy them. So we done that. But then, no, we still sell a lot of lambs on the open market as well. Like, especially if it's good at the moment. It's good. It's a lot better than it was a few years
ago. You're living the dream. Yeah, I think, to be fair, is this, like Chris, you're quite good with stats. Is this the first or a rare time where pigs are good, sheep are good, cows are good? How are poultry doing, Chris? Is poultry good?
So eggs are doing really well at the moment, but after a disastrous
broilers
2 years, so they need it to even... like try and start recouping the losses of the last few years because it's literally just been boom and bust. Chicken is doing okay. Feed prices come back a bit, but they're not really making massive returns. It's doing okay. I think would be the thing. Milk prices obviously come back quite a bit, so that's quite worrying for some of those guys. But yeah, on the whole, beef and lamb prices are good. And I think what is good about markets, like I sell quite a bit of my stuff direct as well, like both of you, but it is quite good to have that fallback crutch of a known market for you. So it helps you sleep at night to know that the animals you are producing, there is going to be a market for them. And selling direct isn't for everyone. I always say that to people thinking of starting up goats. I'm like, well, are you good? Are you quite happy to pick up the phone call and be told, nah, I don't like goat. What are you saying that for? If you're selling direct, you've got to be used to people going, nope. And it's not for everyone. So selling direct isn't for everyone. But if you can use social media and you've got a personality, you think you can, and you've got the confidence, it's a really good avenue.
Yeah.
Go on, Zoe.
I was just going to say that was the reason that we started selling direct was because we wanted to put our own price on our produce.
Yeah, this was on the back of Brexit and being told that meat market was going to crash. We were trying to borrow money to buy stock, and we were like, well, is the stock going to be worthless in 6 months? And then they kept pushing the Brexit thing back and back and back. And then the COVID hit, didn't it? And everyone started buying direct, and we wish he'd started it sooner. And then we just started selling more direct then.
Yeah, and we did a good 2 years of selling a lot direct, like without tooting our own trumpet. It was a successful business, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
And then
it's a lot of work, though.
A lot of work. And then
we
kind of got to the point, I think, well, I certainly got to the point where the price started getting good at the market, and we sold a few bits through the livestock market. And we suddenly looked at each other and said, we haven't put a price on our time. And if we put a price on our time, the business actually isn't probably
the price is good at the minute. Like the margins for me aren't there to try and sell direct. What we're getting for our lambs fat price just in Ashford, dropping a trailer off and having a check the next week, it isn't worth our work doing all the you extra work at the minute. Yeah.
At the moment,
yeah.
Talking about charging your time again, back to new entrants, it's a thing. And we've got a friend, good old Johan, that started a conversation on Twitter a few weeks back about how much is good to pay yourself as a farmer to sort of be able to enjoy life without impacting too much on the business or impacting too much on yourself. And I think the figure that was there, if I remember correctly, I think it said something like £2.50 an hour. And I'm like, you might as well go work for someone else. You might as well go do minimum wage for someone.
Do you want to know a funny story?
Maybe.
Are you going to say about when we did the tenancy?
Yeah. Yeah. So when we done the tenancy, we just applied for a tenancy and it was a big tenancy. We'd done all our cash flows. It was mad. And we didn't price in.
No. It's even better than that. So I spent days doing these cash flow, thanks for the help, Flav. Cash flow forecasts, budgets, all of that. And we said, right. We said to Chris's stepdad, please, will you just look over this and just tell us if we've, you know, made a mistake or we've missed something? Because we were so tunnel vision with wanting this farm.
And the business and everything and like that, yeah.
We were just like, our brains were fried. And he was like, okay, fine, no problem. He went through it and he went, slight problem, guys. You haven't put in any wages whatsoever for the two of you. And we were like,
we haven't salaried ourselves.
We don't. Like, we don't pay ourselves. It's just a business. That's just how businesses go. And he was like, whoa. And he literally like got a pen and put figures in that. He was like, you have to do this.
Yeah.
But it didn't even cross either of our minds.
Because I find like at the moment, especially starting up, luckily Nick is still working full time. I've still got a few other jobs I'm doing. But whenever I'm pricing up, let's say, like after the hog roast, I'm thinking, yes, this is X amount per head. And people are, oh, that's a lot of money. But I'm like, I've got to man this thing for 6 hours, 7 hours to cook. Then I've got to get to your venue. Then I've got to serve you for 2 hours. Then I've got to pack up. Then I've got to go back. Then I've got to pressure wash the bastard for an hour and a half. You think all that time, yeah, it needs to be factored in. And I think without crippling the business, like at the moment, I can't say to myself, oh, I'm going to pay myself the same wage I'm asking to be paid when I'm working somewhere else because the business would just be in minus. But I'm hoping to get to a point where me and Nikki can say, we can take a cut out and the business is fine. And I don't think a lot of farmers do that. And I don't think that's a good thing personally. Because yes, you've got the lifestyle and all this, but it doesn't make financial sense to say you're not going to pay yourself. It's just a lifestyle. Like you can't ring Vodafone and say, oh, my monthly contract this time, I'll pay you in lifestyle. Is that okay? They'll be like, are you mad? Money has to be involved in
it. You literally stack shelves for like £13.
Mate, I know. And you haven't got, you sleep at night. I haven't got to worry about ginger ninjas on the railway line.
You don't have to be up on a Sunday placing sheep.
Or getting sheep out of someone's garden. Did you see that, Chris?
Yeah, yes. I did, yeah.
Oh, sure. My God. I saw the story. My stomach turned.
Can I
So I was going to say 3 Saturdays on the trot, sheep have been out on the roads for us.
It was nearly this weekend as well. If we hadn't have fixed the fence, they'd have been out this weekend. I just wanted to quickly say there, you're saying about, paying yourself a wage and things like that. Obviously, a lot of jobs you pay into a pension, don't you? And things like that. Mm-hmm. With farmers, I do feel like, so when I was a hairdresser, I paid into a pension scheme, and I always did. Since I've been farming, I've put a penny away for when I'm old and grey. I haven't put anything away, and I'm only 30. Do you know what I mean? I'm not worried about retiring yet, but it is something that hasn't really crossed. I mean, have you ever even thought about it, Chris?
What about retirement?
About a pension.
I'm just going to cash all the sheep in, move to Barbados one day.
I think it'd be scary if you looked at the lack of farmers that had pensions. I think it really would be scary. And like, if you look at RABI, the amount of people they have to, say a tenant farmer retires at 75 and they have to help with food and all sorts because literally they've worked hard and all their lives and probably really struggled to make a living. And when they've retired, that's it. They haven't got any income and no savings. And I suppose that's something as the industry, the different bodies really need to make sure that farmers are thinking about the future and setting themselves up for future years. Just back on to your tenancy, I'm just interested. Has it, obviously the disappointment has hurt, and you can see that because it was a dream. Like, has it made you hungrier to go again, or do you think you'd wait a while, or are you chomping at the bit for the next big opportunity, or has it knocked you?
It knocked me really hard, hard. Mainly because it went to a big farming contractor, and most of the reasons we don't go for farm tenancies is because we're like our matey down the road that's got all this land and like has big farms is going to get it. So what's the point? This one, we really felt like they were looking for something different, and we felt like we really had a shock. And then I suddenly was like, nah, there's this glass ceiling that we're never going to, you know, penetrate, and we're just going to be doing this forever. Like, you know, scraping by, getting bits of land off people, hand-me-downs off other farmers. We're never going to, like, actually get to this point now where we can take a big farm on.
Security.
We even had backing from a bank and everything. We had the whole thing worked out for us, and then we still didn't get it. And I was just like, no, we're just never actually going to be able to get one of these, like, proper farms. Like, it was a proper farm. So yeah, it was just frustrating. I am not chomping at the bit, but we're always looking for an opportunity, like always.
But we always have been.
Yeah, we always have been, to be fair. Yeah. But no, I don't know. It hasn't really knocked us back. I don't think I feel ready yet to go through all of that we just went through. Like if one come up tomorrow and I had to do all the cash flows and
I would.
All it's the things. I don't think I've got it in me right now. I actually don't. I feel drained from it. I don't feel like genuinely tired from it. Like it was a really stressful like month. It was horrible. But no, we're like,
well, you've got to learn a lot from it.
Oh, we've learned so much.
Like you would not believe. Like even it sounds so silly, but like even as a couple, we've learned quite a lot of like what we want in our futures as a couple and things like that, which and had a lot of conversations. And actually, like for me, I feel like I saw a lot of strengths in Chris that I maybe haven't seen in other situations, which was quite nice. But that was quite nice for me. Because we worked together.
Every
single day, 365 days a year, I work with him and then obviously come home with him. Like that's quite a lot for any couple. So to see, learn something about someone that you didn't know before that you've been together for 9 years was quite nice to see that.
Chris is like an onion, isn't he?
Same.
What is the farming dream then? What is the dream?
We just want a farm. The dream is just basically a ring fence farm.
We want all our animals in one farm. One farm.
And just to have, not even a big house, we'll be happy with a caravan. Genuinely, just to like a mobile home.
I'd love to live in a mobile home. That's like, rather than a house.
And a farm big enough just to support us, just so we can have like a fairly mediocre, boring life, to be honest with you.
And I want to grow. We don't have to trailer sheep food
10 miles down the road, and we don't have to do this, that, and the other. We want that. Pretty much like a fairly simple life. That's it.
And I really as well would like quite a lot of dogs.
Zoe would like a lot of dogs. Probably a second house just
would
for
you
dogs.
Have a kennels business? Would you have a like a kennels business?
Doggy daycare.
That's good money.
Doggy daycare. To be fair, one of the options that we had for this tenancy, one of the things we said because they wanted it to be like welcome the community. One of the things we said is we could turn one of the fields into like a fenced dog thing where you know you go there with like, because our dogs, like Indy's a pain. We couldn't let her off lead with other dogs. And I thought if Indy wasn't a farm dog, where would we walk? Like, where could we take her off lead and feel comfortable? And then we're like, oh my God, we'll do that at the farm.
But, there's so many of them around me, and so many farmers have a corner of their farm around here. I've probably seen 3 or 4 in about 10-mile radius where people take their. And I think it's if one person is in there, no one else can go in.
Yeah.
So you go in, lock the gate, let your dog out. That's definitely a business idea there. For
I think that's the exciting thing, just
there.
Talking. Or us around here, like there is so many things you can do if you think outside the box.
Oh,
and like
gotcha.
Obviously you've had that time to really sit down and evaluate what you could do on this farm. And that's a message for anyone listening, really. Like there is loads of things, different things you can do. You don't have to do what your dad did or what the farmer previous did. There is markets change, people change. There's so many things that as farmers we can be doing. It doesn't have to always be stereotypical beef and sheep and cows. Like there is loads of different things we can do.
I've got two things to say about that. One is we went back and forth on our business tenancy, back and forth, like, can we really make this work? And we were just like, if we've got the land and it's there, we will make it happen. Like we will find a way to bring money in. There will be something we can do to make it work. And the other thing you were saying about not having to do what your father does and stuff like that, that's actually quite a big strength for us being new entrants, is we have full flexibility to do whatever we like. Like if I want to go out and buy 100 Shetland ewes that do whatever, I can do that because I haven't got my father breathing in my ear telling me that I can't. And I think that's a real strength as a new entrance that you have. Or like, even like, I know there's a lot of people that take their parents' farms on and things like that, and their parents are willing to let kids do things. But yeah, there's a lot of people that can't. And there's a lot, I see that a lot of farmers, like,
well, they say it
frustratingly
to us,
trying to take over the business and want to do things differently, and they just can't. So I do think that's a real like plus for us.
Yeah, as much as new entrants are scrutinized for what they do, in terms of, I don't know, in some of these small, I have a lot of conversation with people, and they say, you know, in our, God, I could never do what, for example, Chris, when we started the little farm fridge, our butchery business, a few people were like, God, I'd never be brave enough to do that in my village. And I couldn't really understand it. But what it is they're a farming family that have been in that village for generations, and kind of breaking the mold would be like the talk of the town. Whereas, you know, as new entrants, as much as people were like, God, they're crazy doing that, if you succeed, they'll be like, God, I wish I'd done that. And I think that's a really lovely, like, there'll be people, I was thinking the other day, Flav, you doing your hog roast
there'll business. Be pig farmers there will out be there so struggling. Many,
yeah, there'll
that
be pig
never
farmers.
Have the bottle. Like, not the bottle, they just wouldn't.
It is the bottle.
Well, yeah, I suppose they just never have the bottle, the courage to go out and buy a hog roast that and try it. That's the thing.
Five months in, and I'm already hearing that, like, oh my God, even like the market one, personally, I wouldn't have done that. I was like, fuck this, I'm not doing it. And how successful it went, talking to people, like, oh my God, that's so good, I might give it a try, or like the hog roast things, yeah. Oh, does that actually make any money? I'm like, well, these are the figures. And that's another thing which I find easier with new entrants rather than sort of people that have been in doing it for long, is the knowledge sharing. Like, even you three here, I've learned so much from you three, and I know I can pick up the phone to either of you and say, look, I've got this, what do I do? Be it financial, be it practical stuff, I can ask the question. And I've got so many other people younger than me that ask me questions, and I tell them, before we went for the tenancy, I remember Chris saying to me that going self-employed, mate, it's going to be, it'll need getting used to, because you won't be having money coming in every month because you got to go look for it. And every time I'm sat here thinking, shit, I've got $2,000 bill for pig feed to pay next week.
Yeah.
Where am I going to get that from? I need to get a hog roast in quick. Every time that sentence Chris said to me, that you're going to miss that monthly money, it always rings in my head. And having people around you that can give you that nice advice and big you up when you're doing well, but also give you the reality of, mate, you're going to be slogging like hell. Just remember that. And you make that choice whether you want to go into it or not. I think in some parts of farming, it's almost lacking a bit, because people are probably scared that if they overshare, you're gonna compete with them. And it's like, there's 60-odd million people in this country.
Nailed it.
We don't even produce enough food to be sufficient. So if I do goat, Chris does goat, you lot do goats, we're not going to, literally, the African and Asian community, they would eat all our goats and we still wouldn't have enough.
Yeah.
So the whole country could do goat and we still wouldn't have enough.
No, agree.
Yeah.
So,
talking of families thinking, like, I remember the first time I told my grandma, who was the first generation on our farm, that I was going to be selling goat. I gave her a goat chop and she genuinely thought I'd lost the plot. He was like, what?
Yeah.
Did she like the goat?
She did eat one. She said it was okay, so I'd take that as a compliment.
What does she think now?
Well, yeah. I don't think she thinks it's a particularly good idea, but I don't really care, because I do, so that's the way it is.
And if it pays the bills...
If it pays the bills...
It is what it is. Yeah.
Chris, can I ask you a question?
A question... Oh.
Yeah?
Can I? What... If you could go back to the start of you building your empire and do anything differently, would you, or would you do everything exactly the same?
Now, like, I think a bit like you, like, I've had a lot of knockbacks and lots of different things. I think, like what I've just learned from you guys doing your tenancy, I actually think it's probably a really good thing in for the future, because you've had something that you really want, you've not got it, and it gives you that drive. So sometimes, like, if people fail or people go bankrupt or things, like, if you talk to someone and they've gone bankrupt, someone's like, oh my God, what a failing. Sometimes things just don't work. It might be something that you've done to your best that you could do, but a market changes. So I'm quite happy with all the mistakes and decisions I've made, because I think, yeah, I might not be where I am today, and I enjoy what I do, and yes, I wouldn't change particularly too much. And I think knockbacks make you stronger. And I think from listening to you guys, I'm fully behind you. And I think, yeah, I can't wait to the day that you get your dream farm and absolutely smash it.
Appreciate that. That's kind of you.
Would you do change anything?
My question time's done now, Flav. You can carry on.
I said, would you two change anything?
I don't know. There'd be a few mistakes that we made, or a few things we'd done, but that were, again, we're just out of our control, really. So would I like to change the past? Definitely. But realistically, I think we wouldn't really have got here any other way, that, yeah. You know.
Mm. It was the way it had to happen.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
We've had knockbacks, but to be fair, they all build resilience in you as well, like you're saying. Like,
I do think
this is the same. It's the same as the social media. The only people you really get crap from are the people that have been given everything and have had an easy time of it. All the people that have come up hard way or struggled in life are never the horrible people. So I think, yeah, no, I don't think we could change much.
I would have wormed for homunculus, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't mention that word to me, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we had a homunculus issue the other year. Yeah.
Last year.
Anyways, I think we've taken up quite a bit of your time tonight. Just a big thank you, really, on behalf of me and Flav and Neil, wherever he's off drinking beer and enjoying himself. Big thank you for joining us. I've sort of followed your journey from afar on social media, and I think as many have. And it's great to see your passion and your enthusiasm. And thanks for sharing just a little bit of your story tonight with us and everyone that's listening.
No problem at all.
Thanks for having us.
And we're looking forward to the second book, Zoe. And anyone with land out there, you got a couple here that need some. At least 500 acres, please, on a house. Thank you.
500 acres.
Thank you, listeners.
Any sugar daddies, hit me up.
Or me.